are you doing with a Beach Boys record?
In mid-January?
Yes.
Early January. Surf's up, dude, in Arizona.
That's true.
In Sunny Slope.
It's a very...
hot and sunny.
Chilly slope. 77 degrees here in Arizona.
Woo!
Hope all's well over there in Canada.
Oh, it's true. They're probably, what, 90, 95 degrees up there?
Oh, yeah. Tropical.
Blue waters.
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah. So what is this? I don't know if I know this Beach Boys song.
It was in a Mott collection. You know, I wouldn't have it. I'm not, you know, I don't dislike the Beach Boys. I just never went out and bought any of their records. So this is
Dance, Dance, Dance.
He's going up to get it. All right, what do you got? Dance, Dance, Dance.
It's Spirit of America.
That's a rat song.
I like this. If we did a Who Did It Better, I'd say this one's better. It's a little more danceable.
Same title.
Yeah, Dance, 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 Breakaway. This is what year is this? God, my eyes. 1975, Capitol Records.
Well, this is a compilation album because this is from the 60s.
Yeah, I think this came out for the Bicentennial.
It's a double album. Oh, is that what it is? Oh, Spirit of America. There you go.
Well, you know,
there's the thing with that, though. Beach Boys, every 4th of July, remember,
yeah,
Liz, they would play downtown.
Yeah.
And it would be the smoke-in, right?
Yeah.
And then what is it? One of the vice presidents.
What's a smoke-in?
No, they went like down right in front of the White House on the ellipse. You could smoke weed right around where the Washington Monument is.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah, that was just like you could do whatever you wanted in that perimeter for 4th of July, and the cops wouldn't bother. If the cop was on the sidewalk and you were right next to him standing on the grass, you could puff a dude.
You could swim in the reflecting pool.
Yeah.
Well, let's get cracking here, AD.
Let's crack then, shall we?
Tonight, what do you say we have a rock and roll party?
Come on, boy!
Abbey Road Records show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Abbey Road Records show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, hey, Laba!
Laba!
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and I'm joined by the only man to ever have this sentence spoken to him. Get off that motorcycle, put on some clothes, and get out of the snow, because none of this will bring Tommy Bolin back to life. A.D. Adams.
I tried. Tommy Bolin's my spirit animal. Well, you know what? We're ringing in the new year, Ryan, here at the old Shabby Road. In shabby tradition, slathered in cheap booze and despair. And I tell you what, dude. If 2017 thinks for 1 minute it's going to behave the way 2016 did, I'm just going to go ahead and kick it square in the nuts right fucking now.
That's right.
Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here.
That's right, man. And thank you for a great 2016. I mean,
record numbers.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you aboard here at Shabby Road and sharing stuff on Facebook and Twitter and all the things you do, leaving those great iTunes reviews and all that stuff. So thanks so much, you guys. It was a great year. So we're hoping
really
that 2017 is even better, and that's along for the ride, right?
Yep,
it's great.
Hopefully less deathful.
Deathful, then. Exactly. Exactly. So let's say hi to Miss Liz Morgan,
yes,
who is here. Engineer extraordinaire now.
Yeah. Ricky Serrano Schmicky Schmorano, I say.
Cutting into my drinking time.
Ricky,
I know.
Ricky and Hal have gone on a winter vacation to Oslo.
Yeah.
And I guess they've had a spat, and this is sort of like a get back together.
Hand in keyboard.
Yeah. He'll be back. They'll be back together.
Yeah.
I mean, they need this time.
I think Hal got jealous because Ricky was using a mouse.
Ooh, is that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that sucks. But we're happy to have Liz with us, who is doing a great job engineering and taking a lot of the workload off of Ricky and Hal and letting them have their time to patch things up.
Yes, it's important.
And rekindle their romance.
Well, you know, when there's a vibe in the air, you can tell, and it just really affects my work, Ryan. So I'm glad that they can get this patched up because this is, you know, it's been stressful on me as a As a personality. An air, on-air personality.
As a public figure.
As a public
figure.
Well, if you'd
like a public drunk.
If you would like to pick up a stress ball to relieve some of that stress that's personalized, you need to go to nameonanything.com, AD.
Absolutely. You know what? They can put your name on anything. They can actually put your name on water, actual water. You want to impress your chick at the beach? Have them put your name on the ocean. nameonanything.com.
Request will not be honored.
No. On the ocean.
Okay.
Big as you want.
Well, maybe not that, but think more MetLife Windbreaker. or tons of other tchotchkes and things like that. Whatever you need, t-shirts, hats, and all that kind of
key
stuff.
Fobs, maybe.
What does your band need? If you've got a band, what does that
money.
Need? What does your business need?
Lighters, money? Man. Lighters. Lighters. Go with the lighters.
Lighters,
sell some lighters.
He's going into Cheech and Chong there for a second. But nameonanything.com will take care of it. They'll personalize anything, get your logo on, stamped on anything under the sun. The ocean's a stretch, but maybe. Reach out to them. And when you reach out to them, make sure the Chabby Road Record Show is mentioned in that reach out, and you'll save 10%.
10%? That's almost
free.
10%. Yeah, free. Yeah.
All right, Choo Choo. That's enough. All
right. Somewhere in the middle of the math meets, I think.
Oh, my gosh. Who do we have on the Astro Van Bench seat here? They're already chiming in.
There's the hither, and then there's the yon Astro Van Bench seat. They over by there, Liz, in the work area.
Yes.
We have Dave and Cindy again back with us. Welcome.
You remember
Happy
them.
New Year.
From the were they on the Christmas show?
I believe it was a Christmas show. Was Santa Claus there? They asked that.
Yes,
Santa was there.
That's right.
And that was a hoot nanny.
Yeah, Cindy from Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the accent.
Yes.
We'll have to get her to tell us some dirty jokes later. She just said a couple words. I'm not going to say them.
I don't blush. I hear a lot of shit, and I blush, Ryan.
Oh, imagine.
Like, wow.
Those listening to the podcast going, wow, you guys don't want to say those jokes? How bad are they?
Hey, so really quick, though, Gary, we got to say hey to the G-Man because he's racking up points, man. Now, he didn't do this officially on the Chabby Road website, which you can go to and click on the buy us a drink thing, you know, like flood the rink thing and buy us a six-pack or a round or a 12-pack or 18-pack or, hell, buy us a keg. Buy us a beer truck.
I have someone that did that, so make it quick there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, G-Man came by here and dropped off a Jameson sampler, which we are partaking in this evening. So.
Oh, my.
Yes,
I believe you've had all of them.
Correct? I've not.
You've not
well,
had
it. I've had the regular Jameson, and I've had what's in the white container.
Yeah, that's the Caskmates, which is really
okay. There's
good,
one so. I haven't tried yet. What's
black,
that?
Black Barrel.
Black Barrel. Yeah.
That's Charred Barrel. And then
one of your
one.
Films.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It is. You know what I had? I was completely shaved.
Oh.
Once you go black, you never go black.
Okay. But thank you, G-Man. That is an awesome gift for
yes,
us down
man.
Here,
thank
down
you
here
for
at Chabby.
Show.
And we should be partaking, but let me get a couple records out before
yes,
we do that.
Before
otherwise,
we slobber through that.
We're never going to make it. But, dude, you know, you mentioned that Chabby Road beer link, and we'll get to the records here in just a second, but we do have to give a shout-out to someone that did go by the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com. Click on that frosty mug of beer just below it. There's a PayPal link where the funds get funneled directly into the fridge here at Chabby Road. And it's all the way from Sweden.
Wow.
Yes.
It's got to be cold by now.
It's freezing, yes.
Excellent.
Now, I really apologize if I get the pronunciation of the name wrong, but it's Arvid Saltin, and it's A-R-V-I-D and S-A-L-T-I-N, okay. All the way from Sweden. He's got us an 18-pack.
Wow.
Thank you so much, man.
I believe the Swedish pronunciation is Carl Palmer.
Carl? No, let's not get into that. That's awesome. That's awesome. So thank you all the way from Sweden.
Yes,
we are going to be
thank you so much, man.
Sipping on those while we dole out three records apiece.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exciting because I love the first show of the year. And I've got a great mystery box. Just kick things up. We always like to kick things off in style as if we're lighting pyro. So tell me about
it's
your mystery
been done
box.
In here. You know, I put a mystery box together. People are so nice. Our friends and people listen to the show. They send us little records and stuff. And Karen Waters, you know, sends us stuff, Kiss autograph stuff. And different people just send us, you know, records. And but these are all gifts from friends and listeners from Christmas that I got. And I always try to bring something new to the show. Always something that I haven't played before, like an artist. And All three I've played. But, you know, the first one is just classic Shab, and it's just so – it's just – you know, you're going to put two horns in the air and just go, oh, it's just so cheesy cool.
Great.
And that's just the way I want to start it off. And then I've got Glitz and Glam, Booze and Smack, and, you know, a veritable train wreck from another
– Booze and Smack?
Yeah. From another veritable – from a Shabby fave. Absolute Shabby fave.
Great.
And then I also brought an album with an incredible story, so bizarre you won't believe it, but it is true, except for the shit I make up, of course.
Well, yeah.
But all three are reissues of classic albums.
Really?
Uh-huh. All reissues on 180-gram vinyl. So these are great gifts that
so
I received.
So hard to find albums? Of the
no,
originals?
Not necessarily, but you know, the each one has like, you know, they came from people that I want to say thanks
gift.
To. Yeah, as
over
a gift.
The holidays.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Well, one came as a gift actually earlier on, but I'll tell the story when I get to that. But it's from friends and I want to give them a shout out and all that. It's a great way to start the new year and go, these have been great. Listening to these records have been great. And then the one that I already had, I've re-caught up with that story, and it's been a blast. So
very nice,
yes,
very nice. Well, I've got a similar situation over here. You know, it's the new year, and it's sort of like we'll start it back with our roots. Like, what is the Shabby wheelhouse? And that's kind of what I went for. Although I wanted to pick some records that are Shabby favorites, and I did two of my three. I do have one new artist. The theme of my mystery box tonight is I can't believe we haven't brought that record yet.
Oh, I imagine there's a few of those, right?
Yeah. They are some Shabby favorite bands, that's for sure. The only new artist is the third one, and that kind of falls more under the category I can't believe we haven't brought this artist yet.
Oh, okay.
So,
wow.
Which, you know, I don't know if you're a big fan, but I'm kind of a fan. But I just thought it was, wow, I can't believe we haven't heard this before. But my first one is a classic 1975.
Bring it on.
Yeah, New York City, you know. And it's got some I got some great stories about it. It's a live album.
All right.
It's not Kiss Alive. But that's you're going to love that. I dug deep and this band is a very interesting band, and I dug deep into the lyrics and some of the backstory. So we've had them on the show before, but it's been a long time, so brought them back, and they're going to break down the doors of 2017 for us tonight.
Okay.
And then we've got a classic, another classic one from going over to England for my next two picks. And this is, again, can't believe we haven't brought this record in. And I looked through, we have the archives here, thanks to Stephen Seaborg,
yes,
the
thank
spreadsheet.
Thank you for that, man.
And I looked and I was like, I double checked and I was like, wow, I can't believe that record hasn't turned up because it is a favorite of ours. And then finally, that last one, like I said, it's an artist that I can't believe we haven't brought because it's such a successful artist with a great story. We'll try to put it all together because there's a million things you can say about
this. That's not the kind of thing we do here.
Well, we'll do our best. And so, yeah, it's going to be a great night here at Shabby,
yes,
it sounds
I'm
like.
I'm excited, man.
And Liz has the two playing cards. The only thing left to do now is to draw to see who's going to be the first one to pull one of those mystery records out. And spin a track. So, nice drum roll, Liz.
Yeah, wow.
How about Cindy picks?
Left or right? Left.
Black, it's me. Oh, I'm so thankful that it's me, because this is a great way to kick off 2017.
I think I got a piece of that popcorn stuck in my throat.
Oh, yeah. We're still eating off of the popcorn tin, yeah. The holiday
like
popcorn tin is still here.
Up a fur ball.
I wonder if that popcorn tin will make it all the way to 2018.
It will. It absolutely will.
All right, AD, just react to the album cover of my first pick. You will go, oh.
Oh. Really?
We have not played this record.
I can't believe that.
What is this record, AD?
That's Blue Oyster Cult, On Your Feet or On Your knees.
That's right, from 1975 on Columbia Records. How has this not been played at Shabby Road?
What is the matter with us?
Hot Rails to Hell is going on the turntable next.
Yeah, what a riff. What a great guitar riff.
This thing is a tour de force, proto-punk almost. These guys are just throwing down.
From the get. This is one of the great live, double live albums of the whole rock era.
Just look at the gatefold.
Are you kidding me?
Here, put
this
that in
is
your
over the freaking
in your
top
Hot Rails hands there.
I can't believe this thing has slipped through our sweaty, greedy grasps.
Right. So this album was mostly recorded in October of 1974, although there is a date, at least on the Wikipedia page, which, of course, has to be factual, of April, which is maybe from a previous tour or something. But the cities are – I mean, they're all over the place in the cities. They did play New York City, the Academy of Music. They did a gig in Portland. That's on here. Seattle. Phoenix, which is the Show Palace in Phoenix, because we're Phoenicians over here. But Vancouver – which
it's
is
in
up,
Canada.
Mm-hmm. Beachfront property.
Nice up there.
Yeah. Long Beach,
I mean,
California.
Over there.
And, of course, New Jersey.
Jersey.
Yeah. So all over the place. So they got the mobile trucks just parked outside. We've never said that right, have we?
It's never. It doesn't matter.
So this album reaches number 22 on Billboard, and it was certified gold in 1977.
Well, I certified it kick ass in 1977.
Did you buy this brand new?
I did.
Upon its release in February of 1975?
I still have it. It's sitting right over there, Ryan.
Right. And as I mentioned, we're going to play Hot Rails to Hell.
Yes.
Which comes originally off of the Tyranny Mutation album. Yes.
I'd say this is definitely – this version is one of them where it definitely eclipses the original studio version. They really knocked
they
it out of the park.
They are throwing
– The fuck. Down.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
The guitars. I mean, Buck Dharma is just
– there's a point where it's just – they're swirling and it's just fierce and you think you're – like an eyeball is going to pop
yes.
at one point. You're just like, oh, come
yeah.
on.
Oh, my God. Okay. So Joe Bouchard. Bouchard is the guy that's responsible for this song. He writes it. He sings it. And he's the bass player of Blue Oyster Cult. So mm-hmm. it's a little odd because you're used to hearing the voice of Eric Bloom or Buck Dharma
mm-hmm.
singing on
yep.
it. But this is Joe doing it. So the lyrics here of just like every other Blue Oyster Cult song are pretty cryptic.
Sandy Pearlman, of course, and having
yeah, Murray Klugman,
or...
who also produced this song too. I mean, they didn't produce this live album, but if you go back to the parent album, it's Pearlman and Murray Klugman.
Yeah.
So I found some cool tidbits, and the thing about Blue Oyster Cult lyrics is that even the guys themselves really don't know or say definitively most times. And that's somewhat true of this one. But I found some cool things, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong. I'm going to kind of lay it out for you, what the words are, what it means for Hot Rails to Hell.
That's a Blue Oyster Cult lyric right there, what you just said.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I saw several folks on the internet, and I went to several pages in research today, refer to the lyric of the chorus, which is 1277 Express to Heaven.
So hooky.
Meaning, oh, that's a great chorus. It's one of my favorite Blue Oyster Cult choruses from the early black and white period.
Tyranny and Mutation.
I go Secret Treaties.
You can have your Secret Treaties.
Yeah.
All right.
1277 is the name of the train that takes you to Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan. So that's what some people say. If there's anybody out there that can fact check that, this is going back to the early 70s, so which is very interesting. So that leads me going, oh, hell, huh? Hot Rails to Hell? Going to Hell's Kitchen. So what is Hell's Kitchen? For those that are unfamiliar, of course, it's a cooking show on Fox, but it's the colloquial name of an Irish slum in the early 19th century West Side Midtown Manhattan.
Oh, no kidding.
And went on and on and on, of course, into... you know, probably the 1930s and 40s even. The most common account of the origin of the name Hell's Kitchen traces it to the story of someone named Dutch Fred, the cop, who's a veteran policeman who, with his rookie partner, were watching a small riot on West 39th Street near 10th Avenue.
I believe it was Cagney was the partner.
Lacey. And so they're watching a riot. And the rookie cop turns to Fred the cop and says, "This place is hell itself." And old veteran Fred the cop turns to him and says, "Hell's a mild climate. This is Hell's Kitchen." Meaning it's a lot hotter than hell, you know.
Right.
And so let's turn our attention now to the first lyric of the song.
Okay.
Riding the underground, swimming in sweat. A rumble above and below. Hey, cop, don't you know?
Sure, that's got to be it.
So, yeah, and this story about Fred the Cop is the most known story of the origin of that name.
Well, rumbling underground, he's in the subway, obviously.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, so.
Right. Fred, so, right. That sort of ties in.
Rumbling above and below the city and then the, mm-hmm. the rumbling of the tracks. So, that
so,
makes sense.
So, to me, if we're going to have a legitimate description of what this song is about, we've answered a lot of the questions in the first line. We've got a cop and we've got a subway. And that's, of course, how we're getting into Hell's Kitchen from a train in Jersey, which is where Blue Oyster Cult's from,
absolutely.
Really.
Right.
So, now the chorus makes reference to that train, 1277 Express to Heaven, speeding along like dynamite, 1277 Express to Heaven, rumbles the steel like a dogfight.
Dogfight.
You caught me in its spell, trying to leave, but you know darn well the heat from below can burn your eyes out.
That's such a great lyric,
that
right?
Hook is.
Oh,
your
eyes out.
So let's take a look at that chorus for a minute and the lyrics to it, okay? Now, Joe, the songwriter, bass player, Burchard, makes a reference to an old booking agent in the second verse that they had early on named Phil King, who was murdered, actually, trying to collect a gambling debt. Mm. The debtor just pulled out a gun and shot him when he was trying to collect on that debt. Now, in the second
here's
verse.
Here's your money.
Yeah, here's your money. Hot lead.
Yeah.
Now, the lyric is black. Now, this is second verse lyric, but I want to trace it back to the chorus. The second verse lyric is blackened out eyes scratched on a wall. Stoned out looks from the crowd, and the king will not know. Phil King, is the name of the booking agent. So he's making reference to his old manager, booking agent guy. The king will not know. So it sounds to me, blackened out eyes and the stoned out looks from the crowd and all this stuff. And the hook of the song is 1277 Express to Heaven. And all these things about, you know, the speeding along like dynamite. I think what this song is about is Blue Oyster Cult partying balls on the train to do a gig, and they're hoping that their manager doesn't know how messed up they are.
That could very well be. I mean, they're going somewhere. They're definitely on the train heading into New York. There's no doubt about that. And then the reference to King, I didn't know anything about that, so that could be a really – you know the cool thing about Blue Oyster Cult back then – back in the day when they first came out, like the first album, then Tyranny, and then, you know, Secret Treaties, and then this one, Three and Live, Three Studio, then Live, if anybody's keeping score.
Yes, of course.
But the thing was that their lyrics were so cryptic and heavy, and they knew it, and they fucking did it, but they never put the lyrics in their albums. So they had a little thing where you could, like, on the back of the jacket, it might even be in here, for lyrics, send us $1 in a self-addressed stamp.
Right.
So you know what I did, man. I'm like, yeah.
Did
so
you send it? You sent
it
away, right?
Oh, fuck yeah. Bob Levy, Jeff, Bob Levy did, and me and Jeff did. So reading those words was like, fuck, that's cool. We had no idea what they were talking about.
Yeah.
But it was really cool shit,
so
though.
So many weird
heavy
things about the lyrics in there.
And they were tripping balls, too. That Sandy Pearlman was always on acid. He was always – he's talking about – have you read any of the stuff he's written talking about – He slipped acid under his tongue, and he's just, fuck.
Well, the whole thing, yeah. I mean, you hear all these stories about how they got the name Blue Oyster Cult. I mean, they didn't even have a name for their band when they auditioned for Columbia Records. And Sandy Pearlman's like, I'll come up with a name by Tuesday when you audition. And they auditioned, and he's like, the name of the band is Blue Oyster Cult. And they're like, what's our fucking name? Wait, wow,
Sandy
God
Pearlman,
damn it.
You're such a dick.
What the, I hate that
why
name.
Why would you call us that?
But there's a whole, I mean, this. I forget the story, but it's something about he walked by a place that had a blue crab something, and he changed it to oyster, and then he made it a cult, you know, because of, there was, you know, the whole thing is Sandy Pearlman had that Imaginos. If you go back to our episode, the last time we played Blue Oyster Cult, it was episode 88. And I played Imaginos because it was the year of that album's release.
Right.
I was doing my 80s run.
Yes, I remember that.
And I unpacked that whole Imaginos thing, which dates back to the late 60s. Sandy Pearlman's philosophy and Albert Burchard.
Yeah.
Who,
he called my house.
He called my house. Albert Burchard.
Who called my house?
Yes, he did,
he
AD.
Did
he called your house looking for Michael Bruce.
Hey, man.
Who's so this? It goes way back. It goes way back. But, man, visit that episode 88 for more of that stuff. But I think we should just rock now. Let's kick off 2017 in the proper way. And we're going to go to On Your Feet or On Your Knees, the live, double live album from 1975 that Blue Oyster Cult did that everybody needs to own.
Well played, Ryan McKay. Well played.
End of side one. If you've never heard this, strap in for this Guitarmageddon.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I heard a couple of people say, hot rails to hell.
Yeah.
coolest thing about live albums right there. That crowd going, fuck, yeah.
That's so stupid, man.
What a great fucking rocking, ripping rendition of that tune, man.
They're throwing it down. All the guitar parts are just brilliant. And yeah, that closes side one of On Your Feet or On Your Knees, Columbia Records, 1975. That's the Mighty Blue Oyster Cult.
It is.
With the Tyranny and Mutation track called Hot Rails to Hell. My God, buy all that black and white period Blue Oyster Cult.
Get it and the live one.
Go, yes,
if you buy
that
one. If you buy no other ones, none other, you have to own those.
Right.
That's just it.
You don't need the one with Don't Fear the Reaper on it. I mean, you do, kind of, if you're a fan like me, but...
You know, but it,
start with Secret Treaties.
No,
whatever. Yeah.
Either one.
This is a good one too. And if you've never heard it, you know, check it out. It's in your record bins right now. It's a green cover with the limo on it, and it's shining like an emerald in your record store for like $8. Just freaking pick it up, man.
Yeah,
it's a fun ride.
Oh, it's a great live. They do that thing at the end where they do that rock and roll medley thing, which is a little weird.
That's well.
But everybody did that.
Back
on
side
the
four.
Steppenwolf live album, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, let's blast through some Chuck Berry shit. What is it? They were hammered.
Now, people liked that back then, I guess.
Cool. Yeah, it was a thing. It was kind of like, yeah.
Right. All right, AD, what you got?
Well, I got some classic. Like I said, everybody I brought tonight, I've brought before. Not necessarily that particular album, but everybody I brought tonight was a gift, and from people from good friends who, you know, and I thought, starting off the new year, it's like, you know what? Let's give a little back. I just want to give shout outs to these people and just say thank you for the gift of music, you know, over the holidays. It was great.
Okay.
And, you know, and so this record came from our good friend Quasar.
Oh, Michael Floyd.
Michael Floyd down in New Orleans. So,
Oh,
what a story.
That was a fun cab ride with him in New York City.
Yeah. Did we talk about that?
It was great. I shared that story with my friends, my family. He's from New Orleans, so he's got that great New Orleans
it's
accent.
It's such a great accent.
I love it.
But Michael's just so matter of fact. He's like – it doesn't mean he's not busting your balls. He's just like really just honest and seeing things the way he sees them.
He's inquisitive. Uber driver had a GPS and Michael Floyd didn't care for that.
Well, why do you have that GPS?
Don't you know where you're going?
You're driving New York. We're in New York. You should know where you're going.
You a cab driver.
I could get a GPS. Why they, you know.
Don't you know where you're going yet?
What's your name? How about, do you mind if I call you Schlitz? Hey, Schlitz, how come you got that GPS?
Schlitz, how long you live here?
He's so funny because he's just a great guy. We love Michael.
Best.
I love you, dude. Thank
Salt
you.
Of the earth.
He really is a great, great guy, man. He was having fun with the bartender. Where were we on Park Avenue?
Yes.
At the
which we'd have no business being on Park
Avenue.
It was
one of the biggest, most famous hotels in
the Waldorf Astoria.
The Waldorf Astoria. And we're drinking in the bar there.
Yes, for some reason.
And we're just about to leave. Well, what did you say? We're bringing Trailer Park Avenue
to
Park Avenue. So we're just about to leave, and Michael wants to pay the tab. You know, this is right before we get in the cab. And he says to the boy, hey, Quasar. He just calls the guy Quasar. And came over. It's just like no big deal. Got his attention, paid his bill, and left. He is a great, great guy. So, Michael, thank you for this. We were talking about this one day, and we were talking about this band, and he's going, I fucking love this band. And I'm going, well, I fucking love this band too. And he just all of a sudden, this thing showed up, and I thought I had all my Uriah Heep.
I did not.
And I brought Sweet Freedom from. And it's a reissue, a 2015 reissue of the original Bronze, 1973,
really?
Similar packaging. But Michael Floyd, we love you, man. We're not, you know, dude, I miss you, man. Thank you for this record. It means a lot to me. I thought I had this record, and I'm looking at my thing. I don't have it. So this completes my Heap collection. This came out in
but, it sounds a little funny, doesn't it?
Yes.
Completes my Heap collection.
No, man, you know what I'm saying. Any Heap fans knows what I'm
next
talking about.
Next on Hoarders.
Yeah. So, but this, you know, the thing is with this record. Now, I'm going to start off talking about the producer. This was produced by Jerry or Gary, but I think it's Jerry, G-E-R-R-Y, because he's British. Jerry and the Pacemakers. Jerry Braun, okay? Now, the thing with Braun is he produced every single Uriah Heep album from their very first one, Very Heavy, Very Humble, as it was called in UK, but it was just simply called Uriah Heep here in the States. through 1975. Now, their first record came out in 70. The last one that Gary Braun did, or Jerry Braun did, it was 1975. Now, you're thinking, okay, well, that's not a body work. They did eight studio albums in just those 5 years.
I believe that they were cranking them.
And not to mention their 1973 monster classic, speaking of double live albums, Gotta Have It or Get Your Head Examined, Uriah Heep live album.
Start Here record for Uriah Heep is
absolutely.
Live 73.
Start, right, it's got it all. It's got all the good shit.
Live
from
73
Magician's
is a great
Birthday
show.
And, you know, Demons and Wizards and the first mm-hmm. record and, yep. and all that stuff. But, I mean, yeah, so this guy was there from the beginning. And if you're looking – it's almost like that AC/DC thing. You know, if AC/DC at a certain point – now, they changed. They, you know, things got a little weird, and I'll talk about that. But for the most part, when you get an AC/DC album, what's it going to sound like? A fucking AC/DC album.
Queen?
They're not going to go and stretch and go, oh, we've reexamined our roots and we decided to make a, you know, it's going to be a fucking AC/DC record.
Highway to Hell was not a disco album, although it came out in 79.
Right? And so Uriah Heep during that era was the same. They, you know, this Gary Braun, Jerry Braun, whatever, however you say it, when you buy a Heap album, you get a Heap album. Now, this I think is one of the unsung heroes of their pack of records that he made.
Okay.
Now, they had a big hit on this, Stealing when I should have been buying, right? Ooh.
Don't know that one.
Ryan, you've certainly heard that.
Wow.
That might change my – really?
Is that what you're playing?
No, but okay. I might now. For you.
Well, I can't place it.
This would be a short distance dedication because I sang it so good, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, like yeah, you nailed
this
it.
This is a 5-foot dedication. I can see you from here. But yeah, you've never heard Stealing. Liz, help me with that.
Nope.
Ooh, Liz. Okay, maybe we should play the hit because I feel like we're not alone.
No.
Oh, really? Oh, thing is, oh, the song I was going to play is just so heapy. It's got this synthesizer thing that just is like you just go, oh.
Is it still Hemsley?
It's, yeah, Ken Hemsley and David Byron. See, here's the thing with this. Now, okay, back to this Jerry Braun thing. And I'll figure out what track to play here. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
But here, check this record.
It's all new.
Yeah, man. Michael Floyd, dude, thank you. That came in the mail just before Christmas, man. So that was cool. So, you know, it's – now, we're not talking about – listen, this guy produced, like we said, all those records, their first record. Well, you know, the first record had Gypsy on it. Remember Come Away, Melinda?
Oh, God. Right? The first record's fantastic.
And the sound. But the sound and the production, right? And then you get to the
heavy.
Next – right?
Dark.
Yep. And then Salisbury, the next record, Bird of Prey. That was, you know, kind of the rockin' synthy number with all the cool vocals.
By the way, since you brought it up, that was in my pile to bring tonight, Salisbury.
Really?
Yeah, I just couldn't find an appropriate track.
Bird of Prey. Yeah. I've played it, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you got that. Then we're also talking about, you know, classic Heap and big, big albums. Look at Yourself, Demons and Wizards, Magician's Birthday. So this is their sixth album. But again, Gary Braun at the helm. Now, the one thing with this record is, you know, at this point in time, things were getting tense. They were drinking a lot.
Well, yeah, the singer.
David Byron.
He
yeah.
was a big time boozer.
Yeah.
Liz, so, I need a try that Jameson.
It's over here. You want to try that?
No, yeah. I'm just kidding. No, not yet. Let me get two records out first.
So this album comes out. This is their sixth record, and you still got the same lineup on board. It's all, you know, same guys. And so, again, you've got that classic Heap sound. Same lineup, same producer. It's great. Everything's going great, right? Mm-hmm. So the live album comes out. Then they do Sweet Freedom. Everybody's starting to get a little fucked up. You're talking about, you know, a little drug shit. Byron's a wreck. He's starting to drink more and more.
Yeah, I see that Gary Thayne's still on here. And, of course, he ended up with a heroin problem.
Right, yeah. So Gary Thayne's last album, as well as Jerry Braun's, was 1975's Return to Fantasy. So they did one in between that. After this one, Sweet Freedom, they did that Wonderwall album, which was, again, it's not a bad record. It's you. Do you have that one?
Wonderwall? No, I've never heard it.
I'm your Wonder. No, it's called Wonder World.
So after Sweet Freedom is Wonderwall.
Wonder World. I'm sorry, I said Wonderwall.
World.
I just did that song Saturday.
No,
night
you've got
with
me
some
messed
band.
Up.
No, I fucked that up because I played that song the other night with some band.
And then after that is Return to Fantasy because I think it's called Return to Fantasy.
Return to Fantasy.
They wanted to go back to more of the Demons and Wizards era.
Yes, and that's actually a really heavy record. So I've got that one. That's a great record.
Yeah, people highly regard that in their catalog.
This one and I think Wonderworld were the ones that were overlooked the most. And I guess my point about the production, the producer himself, and still having that lineup, these records are still as good. The times were different. Bands were glammier, you know, like the Dolls and things like that. And
so Mott was kicking in.
Yeah, Mott was on Broadway.
Well, disco hadn't moved in.
Nah, thank God, right? But the times they were changing. I mean, the Dolls, you know, hell, the Dolls had broken up. You know, but you had the Pistols coming in. So the face of music for quote-unquote dinosaur bands like Uriah Heep and the Deep Purples and the Black Sabbaths in that time, you know, were sort of poo-pooed. And it's like, okay, they're worn out, you know, give me my new stuff. And I'm kind of guilty of that. So I overlooked this album, and I just got it. What year is it?
Plus, it has a hit called Stealing, so you're like, yeah, I'm done with them.
I can't believe you've never heard. No, but that's actually a really good song. I like that song. It's got great. It's got ooh, ah, you know that you know that thing. And what is it? A third and a fifth, right? You know that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 David Byron. get that vibrato going.
Yeah. So now I don't know. So. And then, you know, again, you know, just like Sabbath and just like Purple and all the other bands right about that time of that era. And remember, Uriah Heep were always known to the press or in the press as the poor man's Deep Purple. That was kind of a label they got tagged with constantly and never lived it down. They hated that shit. I think it speaks to this guy, Jerry Braun, and his association with the band and the band as a core. I think this is one of those units that really work that way. You can – a lot of times you can have an artist or a group come in and bring different producers in but and maybe change the thing a little bit and it's this and that. But like AC/DC, with Uriah Heep, you always got – at least during these first eight albums in the live one, you always got a Uriah Heep album. And this album is no exception and I'd say this is as good – as The Magician's Birthday. This is as good as Demons and Wizards.
Really?
This is as good as their first one. I will testify to
that. It's a bold statement.
It's a good record. Listen, with this one, they went a little bit. There was some – they were working – this one and Wonderworld, they had kind of – they – somebody was saying, look, man, we're dinosaurs. We're old and we need to step up our game.
So they need to modernize for
Wonderworld.
Yeah,
and they
Wonder
did a little bit. And yeah, for this one and Wonderworld. But it's still a great, great record. They didn't wander too far. You know what I mean?
Okay, it's not as far – looking back, it's not as far of a leap.
I thought it was at the time, and I'm like, You know?
Right.
And if you – and I guess what I'm urging people to do is go back and give these records a chance. You know, definitely the start here point is the double live album with Uriah Heep. That's absolutely. And then you're going to want to go back to Magician's Birthday, Demons and Wizards, Look at Yourself, Salisbury.
Great records.
Yeah, and the first one, of course, which is fantastic. But revisit these records. If visit them. You probably haven't. I'm willing to bet most people haven't.
I've never heard this one.
It's a great record. So, okay, now the dilemma. Do we play the one that I can't believe? As soon as we put
tying
it on.
Tying into what you're saying and the arc of your discussion here is about how this sounds like an old Uriah Heep record. So play your old Heapy song.
This is totally Heapy. It's a song called Pilgrim. It's the last song.
Oh, boy.
Well,
it's how long is it?
It's about 7 minutes, right?
Do they have to get to Plymouth Rock?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a song, of course, Ryan, that speaks of the weary traveler.
Of course.
The lonely soul, Ryan, on a quest for love, peace, and acceptance like no other Uriah Heep song, of course, ever has.
That's all.
Or is that all of them? Yeah, I knew it was one of the two. So it's actually, dude, right off the bat, as soon as you hear the intro and this synthesizer, the Moog Simplifier, just goes nutty, and you're just gonna go, "That's so Heap," and shake your head.
Yeah,
and you'll probably want to drink from this Jack Daniel's.
And then let me see here. Let me look at the first words and see if I could recreate. Now I've never heard this, but
right,
sung by David Byron,
of course, a drunken David Byron.
Yes, Pilgrim at the Grave. Pilgrim at the Grave of Dawn. Go like that.
You might have that, yes. And yeah,
leaving in the mist of the morning.
Exactly.
Shall we try
it? Spot on. Now, here's the thing. Now, Dave's, you know, there's a little falsetto part he's, at the end he's having a little trouble with.
And that's the booze talking.
Yeah, that's again why I want to play this, because you're going fucking heap. And at the end you go, ooh.
Uh-oh.
And but it's okay. You know he's hammered and you let him get away with it.
was cheap and adored, and I thought fame was all the world. Battles won and victory cheers were the sounds I'd heard for years.
That's fucking Heap, right? If you'd never heard that, and somebody goes, "Who is this?"
I go, "You're right,
you're fucking Heap, it's dude. Fucking are you kidding?
You're right, Heap."
And as far as I'm concerned, this album easily ranks amongst the top of Heap's Heap.
It does. It does need to be. I mentioned to you that it is very Heapy.
Yeah.
It sounds like Salisbury. It sounds like Demons and Wizards, like you said.
He's working on that falsetto at the end, though, isn't he?
Yeah. We're coming off the rails. We're basically half in the ditch.
Right.
At this point.
And I think it's Jerry Braun and Ken Hensley that are keeping the whole thing together, really.
And McBox.
Well, yeah, McBox is – yeah, he's always been stalwart there.
He's still there. He's like the guy.
Yeah.
Still to this day.
But, I mean, if you think about it
– what are you doing?
I'm trying to get my beer out of this cooler thing.
What does that sound? I'm like – it sounds like you were –
was it squishy? I can't hear it, I guess.
It's like strangling a hamster.
It's this thing –
do it again.
This beer koozie that from the beach bum in Mexico. Oh, I hear it. I didn't hear it before. I was talking. Wow. I didn't realize it. Sorry about that. But, I mean, listen, you know, and think about this. Now, at first, like, you kind of raised an eyebrow right at the first thing when the verse came in, and they kind of did the pre-Iron Maiden gallop, which it wasn't really a full-on gallop. It actually kind of sounded disco-y, didn't it, Ryan?
Oh, the wah-wah pedal section?
Now, let me ask you something. When did disco hit?
Well, after Mott broke up, of course.
Right?
But it sounded like – I said it sounded like Shaft.
When was Shaft?
71.
Was it that early?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, man, Uriah Heep invented disco. Oh.
That's not a feather in your cap.
No.
Is a black mark on you. I love disco.
I would say that they're also the founders of the Weary Traveler Loner school of songwriting.
Yes, you know, true.
They invented that, and David Coverdale was a pupil in that school. The lonely, weary traveler.
Oh, he is always a drifter.
A drifter that walks alone.
And he's always downhearted.
And fighting for love.
That's right.
Looking
and
for acceptance.
Stranger in a town.
Yes, and weary and lonely.
Yes.
And, yeah. So I'd say Uriah Heep is also the inventor of that.
Yeah, I think he
genre
took a page.
Of epic rock loner songs.
Absolutely.
Traveling. Anyways, traveling on, Ryan. What do you got?
Well, my mystery box is, of course, I can't believe we haven't brought this or played this yet, and I'm going to pull out another record that I dude, I looked on the Shabby Archives, and this record has never been played.
Oh, you're fucking lying.
What is it?
Slatest. Are you serious?
Slade. Really? With the album Slatest.
Well, it's a greatest hits package, so maybe that's why we've shied away from it, perhaps.
Look at the back cover. Just take this and look at the back cover.
This is epic.
And can you describe the back cover quickly, please?
Okay. Well, it looks like a small club, a medium-sized club with old wooden stage. It's wider than it is deep. The back of the drums, from the back of the drummer to the front of the stage, it's only about 10 feet. So in front of the bass drum, there's only about 4 feet.
The photograph is taken from stage left.
Stage left. So you're looking at the drummer.
Wings.
Yes.
Wings of the stage.
And it's a big old chrome Ludwig kit. And Don Powell is
such a drummer.
In this striped fucking pants that matches his vest, and he's shirtless, and he's got their fucking cool ass bell bottoms. It's like black and white stripe, and Naughty Holder's wearing these platform boots that are like red, and then he's got those plaid bell, but like stovepipe barrel pants.
Yeah,
big and wide,
look like golfers' pants. Yeah. Like they're just loud
with the cuffs rolled up, so you can see his yellow and red striped socks. He's wearing a long red tuxedo tails overcoat, red with, you know, with tails, tuxedo jacket, and his big giant Abe Lincoln hat with the mirrors attached to it, and rocking balls in the rockiest of pose. Of course, Jimmy Lee is on the far side of the stage. You're looking at him. He's in what looks like a red leather suit, badass, on very giant shoes. But the star of our show.
Oh, yeah. We haven't got to the
closest to the camera.
The headliner is
right
Dave
up
Hill.
Front, and obviously playing a solo since there's no one on the mic and he's in the front, is Dave fucking Hill, dressed in the coolest all silver fucking outfit. It might be the Super Yob outfit. With the silver platform shoes, I would put them at about 4 to 6 inches high.
They're huge.
Knee high silver boots, silver leather pants. I don't even know what. And his hair just was sparkles all over in it.
So great. That is the back cover of Slatest, released 1973 in September.
Have you seen
on
this?
Reprise Records. Yeah, Liz, take an eye. Get an eyeful of that.
Tell me if I got close.
Upon this album's release in the UK, it hits number one.
Of course it did. You know why? Fucking Slade. You American fools, wake up.
Okay, it stays in the top 10 for the rest of the year until December, right around Christmas, when they release their Christmas hit.
Oh, huge. They still play that.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Yeah. It hits number one again during Christmas. Because everybody loves Slade.
Yes, they
and,
do.
And they went out and continued to buy Slatest in the UK. And it goes on to be a gold record over there, of course. And Slade Mania in the UK is in full effect. This is the height of their powers. This is a compilation album that comprises mostly their earlier singles. It goes up to the album Slade with a Y.
Yep.
And I'm holding my thumb out.
Goodbye to Jane.
Goodbye to Jane.
Goodbye.
Yep. Over in the US, AD, it's a different story.
Of course. Wow. Right?
Slatest comes out. And it hits, guess where it hit in the Billboard chart?
Number one on my charts, because I pedaled my ass up and I bought
92.
This record.
Where do you think? Liz says 92. Where do you think?
I would say, what, on the singles or album chart?
Album chart, Slatest.
I would say not even in the top 100.
Not in the top 100.
I'd say probably 200.
No, 129.
Okay.
129. So you had the 2 and the 9.
Look at that. Even on the front, Dave Hill's haircut.
That haircut is an abomination.
It's fantastic.
I think the album cover, you just described the back cover, but the album cover was voted, I believe, the best Slade cover of all time by their UK fan base.
Look how great
back
they
in
look.
79.
Fucking cool they look, dude.
All the white scarves.
I remember holding this album just going, fuck, how great is this?
So we're going to play... Whose town is this, AD?
Huh?
Whose town is this?
Whose town is this?
This is my town.
Okay. Oh, I'm with you. Okay.
All right. Now, there's a big discrepancy here, and I know we have
Senor
some...
Senor town!
Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
My matter.
One of my favorite Slade songs ever.
And of course, everything, they always spelled things weird. So on this one, they actually spelled it right, but made some letters backwards just to keep with the trend of their misspelling of things.
So I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on the discrepancies between the two releases here, but there are vast differences, and it really kind of, it shines a bit of a light on the philosophy behind releasing a huge UK band who's trying to break the American market.
They were so perfect for America at that time.
This is a band that was just crushing.
God,
I mean, this is six number one records in a row in the UK.
Now, I would say to my friends, you got to listen to this stuff. And they go, eh?
It's all right.
I'm like, oh, fucking what?
So,
are you kidding?
Amazing pop sensibility and just rock and roll balls to the wall with great chord changes and great musicians and such characters, all four of them.
Yeah, my buddy Ton, he got it.
Good.
He totally got it. He's like, fucking badass.
So, all right. So this Slatest comes out in the UK and then it comes out in the US. The US version, we got to switch out the song called One Way Hotel for the song My Friend Stan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a switch in the right direction for us.
I'd say so, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Then we also have to switch out Wild Winds Are Blowing. Good groove.
That's a good song.
Good song.
Right.
For this song, My Town. I think we traded up again.
Slightly.
But here's the thing. They leave off four songs for some reason. There's four songs just left off of the American release.
I wonder, maybe for fidelity's sake. Maybe they wanted record to sound better and louder in America. You know, I don't know.
So we lose Pook Hill, Shapes of Things to Come.
I'm all right with that.
And Know Who You Are.
Ooh.
I know. And Look at Last Night.
Ooh, yeah, I would have taken those two. They could have put one more on.
Well, it's interesting to note, My Town appears, you know, on this U.S. version, but not on the U.K. version on this album because it wasn't released yet. When, of course, there's a lag time between Slatest coming out in the U.K. and Slatest coming out in in the U.S. And in the interim, in the U.K., they released My Town on a single. Actually, the A side of the single was My Friend Stan.
Okay.
So both what they did was the U.S. market during that time frame already had a heads up, like, here's the new single. Well, we want the new single on our record here in the States.
Sure.
And so they kicked a couple – they switched them out. But, again, omitting tracks was a little strange.
I could see where they would have got rid of two of them, but they should have kept the two of them too. The last two you mentioned were, I think – worth keeping for sure.
Right, right. So this is the only way in the States that we get My Town and My Friend Stan. They were left off of the next studio albums in favor of the new tracks. And the next studio album that they did was Stomp Your Hands, Clap Your Feet in the U.S. Of course, Old New Barred and Blue, which is Start Here record for Slade, maybe? I don't know.
You know what, man?
Or S-L-A-Y-E-D, Slade.
I would say that, dude, I would always go with the Slade album.
S-L-A-Y-E-D.
Yeah, Slade. S-L-A-Y. It's the one where they're holding
This is a good one, too, Slade.
Slade is good.
I mean, read the track listing as is on the American version and tell me that's not a great compilation of early Slade.
Get down and get with it.
Get down and get with it.
All right, everybody.
You've actually already heard the beginning of it.
Every fucking time you tune into this show. Cause I Love You, great.
Okay.
Great. Look What You Done.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Take Me Back, Ohm.
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 Apostrophe Ohm.
Mama, We're All Crazy Now. The proper version, the actual version, not the shitty version.
From Quiet Riot.
We should play that and teach people a thing or two.
Wow.
Side two.
You're very proud of yourself in this podcast.
Hey, Slade, dude.
Teach people a thing or
it's
two.
It's giving me power. I hold like this thing, this album in my hand. It's like powerful.
Wild arrogance.
Yeah. Goodbye to Jane on side two, track one, right? Come On, Feel the Noise.
Again, show people a thing or two.
Squeeze Me, Please Me.
Yeah.
A song that they didn't want to release, really, because they didn't like the there was issues with, I guess, some tape speed, and it's a little E, if you ever noticed that. Yeah.
It's a number one record in the UK.
Yes, and they didn't want to release it because they thought the production was weird. I guess when they transferred some tapes over, it got a little, like, sort of out of phase, a little weird.
Really?
And yeah, listen to it again when you get a moment.
Okay.
You'll know what I'm talking about, but they hated it. They don't want to I think it went to number one.
Oh, yeah, it was the number one hit. They had 6 number one hits in a row, as I mentioned. And my friend Stan is the first one that went to number 2, and it was a disappointment.
And that's the next one. My friend Stan closes out with My Town.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this powerhouse. Listen, Slatest, the one you said, Old New Barham Blue, which is a collection album, or the Slate album. And I think why I like the Slate album is because it's an album unto itself. It's not a greatest hits album. And it's that good.
And Goodbye to Jane's on that, right?
And so is Goodbye.
So is Mama, We're All Crazy.
Absolutely.
And Come On, Feel the Noise.
Yes, it is. And I think they do a blistering version of Move Over.
Yeah, they do.
By Janis Joplin on that.
Yeah, they do.
That would make a great Who Did It Better.
Ooh.
And Slade, you know what? My vote's in.
Ooh, yeah,
so you know Slade. What? Just bring it, dude. Ryan, you know what? Just bring it. You bring it right. Next time. And you already got my vote. So.
Well, I'm ready to just drop the needle on it. I pulled this one because I can't believe we haven't brought the Slatest album.
That's two that surprised me, man.
As in greatest, but, you know, Slatest.
Slatest, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and it was only the beginning, and they would go on to make three or four more great records after this. And the Start Here record, as AD said, Slade with a Y, S-L-A-Y-E-D. And this one in Old New Barham Blue, which is called Stomp Your Hands, Clap Your Feet, with the red cover here in the States. And In Flame, of course. We've played all this stuff before.
You know what? Yeah.
Love that band, Slade.
You're rocking in the new year, man. You're throwing
down.
I
am. Yeah, that is from Slatest, the American release of that. Of course, that comes on Old New Barham Blue if you're over in the UK.
Yes.
B-side of a single, My Friend Stan, which is another great song.
But get them both. If you dig Slade, get them both. That way you'll have all the tunes. You'll have, you know, they overlap a little bit, but
just start
that.
Piling them
up. Yeah, why not, right? Damn, good, Ryan. Bluish Colton Slade, huh?
Yeah, what you got? You better do something to top that, man.
I got some magic in here. Well,
really?
If you consider a train wreck magic.
Sometimes.
And in this case, it's pure joy. Absolute pure joy. On their 1972 trip, their first trip to Europe, well before the release of their first record, which came out in July of 1973, they left their drummer Billy Mercia dead in Europe.
That's the New York Dolls.
It is indeed. While on their first European tour, which included a couple of dates, Mercia was invited to a party where he passed out from an accidental overdose. His fellow junkie and partygoers put him in a bathtub and tried to force feed him coffee, and they drowned him. The rock and roll legend. So Dolls go – and listen, the Dolls albums – remember, they were already going to Europe and influencing the scene – over there.
Without a record.
Without a record. These are the early shows. And they only did a few shows over there the first time when they went over there in 72. Mm-hmm. They did color me wrong. You know, the facts ain't right. But I think they only did like three or four shows.
Probably.
Max over there. But they went to Europe. They went over there somehow. And Malcolm McLaren was involved with the whole thing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But there was a whole press. But then Mercia – apparently Mercia, when they first arrived, apparently threw up in the airport the first time.
That's a bad omen.
Right? Yeah. So then, of course, then he dies over there. So they come home without their drummer. Enter Jerry Nolan. Okay?
Great.
Jerry Nolan. They regroup. Then they sit down. They record their first album. And Jerry Nolan is a motherfucker. You talk about simple drummers who really keep it together, much like we just heard with Don Powell from Slade.
Don Powell from Slade. Yeah, similar. Yeah.
Honest to God, if you listen to these New York Dolls records, man, Jerry Nolan is a damn solid drummer. He's not
– He's like a Peter
flashy.
Chris.
Yeah. But he's good. Yeah. But he's got great timing, like clever
– Nice little pocket.
Fills that make sense, very melodic.
I mean, he's playing with – A couple of junkies.
Right, yeah. Well, and the thing is, here's the thing, and I don't normally read from stuff, but so they go over, but now they record the first album, and in November 73, like a year later, after Mercia's dies over there, they go back over there, okay? So he wasted, pardon the expression, no time filling in Billy Mercia's, or the ex Billy Mercia's shoes.
Yeah.
I'm going to read a little bit from this British journalist. Her name is Nina Antonia. She had a book called Too Much Too Soon. Came out in February 2006. But I was going to write and take notes, but this has to be – she writes this so – you get such a picture of what was going down. So
Okay. Indulge
me if you will. On November 28th, 1973, the New York Dolls traveled to France. It could have been turbulence, or it might have been a champagne hangover from the 40 bottles consumed the previous day. But Thunders and Nolan felt so sick on the journey that for once neither of them was particularly into booze that day. Being a doll wasn't a healthy option at best at times, but Johnny and Jerry's symptoms were a little different from the usual morning after the night nausea. Soundman Pete Jordan said, I noticed that Johnny and Jerry were acting a little funny. That was the first time I was aware of their abuse of narcotics. When Jerry joined the band – now, this is not even a year ago. When Jerry joined the band, he didn't even smoke cigarettes. He didn't do any kind of drugs. He didn't drink. If he did go out and have something, it would be something really corny like a whiskey and soda. Right?
What do you know?
He goes, it was a surprise to me that either of them had gotten into heroin. Johnny was a hip guy and he'd been around the block, even though he's very young. Frankly, there was enough aggravation already going on, so the last thing I expected them to be was strung out on heroin. The Dolls' arrival at Orly Airport became infamous, with Thunders taking over the late Billy Mercia's unfortunate predilection for public vomiting.
Oh, no. He reprised the...
Waiting alongside the gathering pack of press photographers at the airport was Patrick Tatin, a dour French employee of Mercury Records, who just this angry guy. He's just
in a
stuck,
suit.
And he's stuck with these American Dolls, right? So Patrick Tatin, a dour French employee of Mercury Records, who was supposed to look after the band during their visit, but in private kept a damning dossier, which he later submitted to the record company. Blah, 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 blah. Thunders, he says, Thunders got sick right on the airport floor, and he had to leave the scene for a minute to pull himself together and make a decent comeback. Splattered with vomit, the photographers and reporters wiped themselves down and returned to their news desk to write realms of salacious prose and develop their pictures. Sylvain, quote, Sylvain, it was all over the press. The dolls arrived in France and they are degenerate, drug-addicted faggots.
And he's an assless chap.
Yeah, remember that photo?
Yes,
yeah, he comes with cowboy boots, a glitter cowboy hat, and assless chaps.
Yeah.
And I believe
seems uncomfortable on the plane.
And a toy holster with actual toy guns,
yes,
which you can't walk onto anymore.
Oh, no.
Right? Oh, the times have changed.
They'll let you on the plane with assless chaps now, but not the toy guns.
Right. So only NME's New Music Express, Nick Kent, no stranger to decadence, having studied chemical abuse in a court of the Rolling Stones, was able to interject a little humor scenario. Quote, Johnny Thunders throws up, blah, God knows how many photographers are there, Paris Match, Stern Magazine, all the European rock press and the nationals. The record company folks have arranged a special little welcome. Blah, the members of the band look stone-faced and wasted, wonder if he's going to be making it or is he going to fall into his own vomit. This is so
Jesus
great.
Christ.
So, okay, this is their – now, remember, they lost their drummer last time. You think they go, all right, listen, guys.
Let's try to pull it together.
They haven't even reached the cab yet. And they're hurling on the
– this is not going well.
So, Les Poupées de New York.
Les
Poupées, L-E-S, Poupées, P-O-U-P-E-S. That means the Dolls du New York enjoyed a riotous first night at the French capital. So now Malcolm McLaren is in tow, Ryan.
And he wants
the
a impresario, piece of this.
The, yeah. Now, remember, this is before the Sex Pistols.
He wants to get into those assless chaps and see what's going on with the Dolls.
And remember, Johnny Rotten was a big fan. He kept sneaking into their shows. So that might have been the common mind between Johnny Rotten and Malcolm McLaren, their love for the Dolls. So anyway, it's just, dude, it gets so fucking crazy. So I gotta read some of this stuff. I'm going to go – remember, they lost their drummer. And now they're back. And these are exploits, and I'm just going to read them because they're so fucking funny. This talks about when the record label arranged, once they got everybody cleaned up and they go to this
sobered
bar,
up.
Right? They go to this bar and it's just like, you know, hey, you know, we're going to have a press conference here and it's going to be really cool. So, but it says, by late afternoon, the Dolls had assembled in the bar, and the interviews got underway. As usual, David Johansen nursed a bottle of Remy Martin, his favorite accessory, as he entertained the gentlemen of the press. If Arthur, talking about Arthur Killer Kane, the bass player, was a withdrawn drunk who could on occasion barely negotiate his way on stage, David Joe was a loud lush capable of being either extremely witty or a mean-mouthed bitch, depending on circumstances.
Beautiful.
Again, yes. We quote Sylvain. Arthur and I used to call him Tutu Fly. He used to be like a drunk Betty Davis.
Tutu Fly.
Right? Yeah. So now we're going to get to where I want to go because I'm going to play, Ryan.
First New York Dolls album, I presume.
No, I'm not. I'm going to play. Now, remember, okay. these are presents. These are gifts from friends. This was a present. Now, right before Christmas, G-Man, Gary, treated me to a Brian Setzer show. So we went out and hung out with Leslie and all this.
Yeah.
And beforehand, he came by and picked me up and said, I don't know if you have this.
What is it?
The New York Dolls.
What does that do?
Oh, right. Yeah. Radio Luxembourg.
Huh. Right? Paris 1973.
This is from that tour. Now, I'm going to read.
Oh, what kind of condition are they in?
Oh.
Wow, look at this. Sleeve,
right? 180 gram vinyl. Thank you, G-Man. What a great record. These guys, Ryan, are fucked up on this record. It is so fun. It is so Dolls. And I'm thinking, let's ring in the new year. They're still drinking. You know, everybody right now, we're all sort of going, oh, yeah, that was, woo, I got to get back in shape. Those holidays, I've put some pounds
on. It's been a
week. I drink too much.
It's been a week. Let's get going.
The Dolls are still drinking. They're like, come on. Come on, boys.
That was Southern of you.
Yeah.
Here.
So Anyway, the name of the album, I'm sorry, it's The New York Dolls Live at Radio Luxembourg, Paris, 1973. Now, this came out on Lilith Records in 2010.
This is a famous old bootleg, right? I mean, this goes back to the...
No. This is... I'm sure somebody bootlegged it along the way, certainly. But this is a 180-gram reissue. The mastering on it's great, which actually makes it so great because the performance is so horrible. They're awful. They put in a great performance of Bad Girl on here, which is really solid. But I
want to hear track 4, side A, Give Her a Great Big Kiss.
It was either that or Stranded in a Jungle. And they're both pretty ruckus, but Stranded in a Jungle, you can tell how fucked up that. Well, you know what? I don't know. We'll figure it out. But
we're never going to hear Great Big Kiss because it's not on a record.
Yeah, but that's the thing with this. The way they do, remember, this is live and they're fucked up.
All right. Well, you recommend Stranded in the Jungle.
Let me talk about the thing. You know, remember this Stern Mercury babysitter from Mercury Records. Now he goes, next, there was a live concert talking about this album, at Radio Luxembourg. Although they had been requested for rehearsals at 17:30, the group were not ready before 1900 hours time. So it's
just
an hour and a half
late.
Yep. And went to the studio in a frightening state of drunkenness. One of the most nerve-shattering.
That's the title of this episode.
One of the most, right?
State of drunkenness.
One of the most nerve-shattering experiences of my, quote, business life. The Radio Luxembourg show, which is now available on CD as either Paris Burning or Paris Les Trash.
Paris Burning is what I've heard this
okay,
as.
Yeah, okay, yeah, okay. He goes, is solidly anchored by Jerry's drumming, keeping the band in shape. Sylvain, if you listen to that recording, you can hear what condition David was in. He was a drunken mess. His ego had completely gone overboard, and he couldn't do no wrong in his own eyes. He was trying to talk in French, and he was so out of it.
Oh, boy.
Ryan, do you want to hear A Great Big Kiss? I picked Stranded in the Jungle.
No, pick do your thing. Do your thing.
All right, Liz, do you know either?
No.
Gonna walk right over to her, give her a great big kiss.
You know what? Let's do that. Let's put it
on.
Sure? Right? Yeah, let's go with that.
Are we missing out on something cool and Stranded in the Jungle?
You know what? I'm not going to play the studio version. If I ever play it, it's going to be this version. It's that they're that drunk. I think that's what it really demonstrates is their drunkenness. And I think that's what I liked
about
it.
I'm so torn.
I'll let you – dude, listen. Honest to God, Ryan, we're friends. I've known you a long time. I'm turning this over to you. And either one's kick ass. So that's what I'm saying.
The only
– hit it. Let's put that on. It's great.
All right. Well
– you'll like it.
I won't – let's not even say.
Okay.
From Queens, New York, Les Shangri-Las. Yeah.
Oh, that is an abrasive mix.
The New York Dolls live at Radio Luxembourg, Paris, 1973. That's the name of the album. On Lilith Records, came out 2010, an old recording from way back in the day, right as their new record came out, a big press junket in Paris.
Yeah.
And thank you, G-Man, for that record. What a fun, real New York Dolls album. But really
it's
quick.
A classic bootleg.
Just to let you know how the rest of the trip went. Now, remember that aforementioned the press conference that this poor guy, Patrick Tatton, was in charge. He was a Mercury rep. And he was
Mercury rec?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I guess Freudian there. But so, yeah, so he was the guy that was, you know, going, oh, my God, you know. So he talked about that press conference. Well, at the end of the day, there was supposed to only be a few people what got mobbed. So everybody ran out on the bill that was supposed to cover the bill. He had to foot an $8,000 bar tab.
Oh, In 1973?
In 1973. Jesus. He's just that guy. He's probably hanging from a noose somewhere. Undiscovered. He buried himself in the desert.
He dug a hole and buried himself.
That poor guy.
Oh.
So anyway, man, how about that?
How many syllables are in the word wham? Because David Johansen,
all of them,
give you a great big kiss.
Wham!
There's four, right?
Walk right four, up to two, her. Give her a great big kiss. What you got?
Hawaii-ama.
Hawaii-ama.
That's four, right?
Yeah.
Hawaii-ama. Hawaii-ama. That's four syllables in wham.
David J. got a lot of lips and teeth to get past those. He got to really push that shit.
And that's why we love the Dolls,
yes,
right?
That's the Dolls at their most pure, man. That's the real New York Dolls, and they're horribly, blissfully. They're so great.
They're just
Fun record. Anybody who loves the Dolls, if you haven't heard this, get this record. It's a frolic through heroin and liquor, and it's just a blast. They're at their worst, and it's fantastic.
All right, moving on to my next pick here somehow.
Yes.
Is another – this one's not necessarily a record that I can't believe we haven't brought. It's an artist that has never a classic.
Is he any good? Better than the Dolls?
This is a guy that could sing the phone book, and I would just listen to. He's got great moments, and he's got horrible moments in his career. But this is a career that has gone on for 40-plus years.
I'm Peter Tork.
And Mercury Records is still in play here. And this is May of 1971 when this song was originally recorded, but this is a compilation album.
Solo artist.
Solo artist, yes, but also a band guy.
Frankie Valli.
And no, man.
Having my baby.
I'm going to give a shout out to my wife who posted this on her Facebook the other day. And what's your favorite Rod Stewart song?
Oh, my God. That's right, she did.
Yeah, and it was met with a million comments like, oh, yeah, that's somebody you don't even think of.
That's a good record.
So I brought the best of Rod Stewart. This is a Mercury label release. Comes out in 76. Of course, he changed record labels and became a pop star in America, you know, doing all the sort of glittery disco stuff. Back in the day, in the original run, he was on Mercury. And I'm going to... You know, I kind of waffled. I commented on Michelle's post, what's your favorite Rod Stewart song? And I said, Handbags and Glad Rags.
Yeah.
And, but then I listened to this double record here. This is a two record set that you can find for like $3 anywhere. And it's so great.
Mind you, this is a double album greatest hits, but it's before all this. Tonight.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't have.
Before that, from his Every Picture Tells a Story.
No, it's after that.
Or I'm sorry.
You're thinking of Do You Think I'm Sexy?
No. I'm saying this is before all that.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Right. This is. Oh, you're talking about the album.
Right. Yes. Greatest Hits before all the cheesy shit.
Yes. Exactly.
Right. Okay.
So there's no Tonight's the Night. There's no Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Right. Right. Yes.
All Hot Legs, none of that's on here. This is all the old stuff with the faces.
Which really renders this a really strong album for a greatest hits record.
Actually does. You know, and I'm not big on best of albums or whatever, but This one's kind of cool, and you can find it pretty cheap. You can almost find this at a Goodwill or something for like a buck or something. And it's worth it because these performances are so spirited.
Yeah.
Plus, on this record, you get some, you know, like we talked about Slade with the A and B singles that came out. He did a bunch of singles that weren't on the records. So they're included in here. So although it's not all encompassing, it really is something unique and worth owning if you're a fan. So I'm going to play Every Picture Tells a Story.
Ah.
And I waffled on my pick because I wanted to do Handbags and Glad Rags, but I switched my pick because as I was listening and doing my notes on Handbags and all that, I heard the background vocals and I was like, oh, I have to bring this one. Do you know who sings background vocals on this song?
No.
You don't know and you don't know.
I don't know. Uh-uh.
Okay, now I'm going to make you guess. I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, make me guess.
Yeah. It's definitely voices that you guys know. There's two voices, actually.
Got to be Flo and Eddie.
No, they're not necessarily together voices.
Elton John.
So, originally released in May of 1971, Every Picture Tells a Story. The album of the same name. That would be Rod's third solo album and the most critically acclaimed one, making that Rolling Stone list of 500 albums you want to hear, blah, blah, blah. Probably the Start Here record for Rod Stewart.
I would think so, yeah.
It's the one with Maggie. It's got Maggie May on it.
I mean, as far as the solo stuff, I dig the Faces stuff.
I think.
Whatever.
So let's do a brief synopsis of Rod the Bod's halcyon days here.
Yes.
And, of course, we have to start with a man named Jeff Beck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to leave out a lot of the early stuff, and obviously we won't even touch on the Atlantic Crossing stuff later. But Jeff Beck leaves the Yardbirds and puts a solo band together, and he goes trolling into the London clubs to find a singer, and he finds Rod Stewart, who's a guy that's making the rounds and also has a great reputation, you know, and stuff. So he's no stranger to the circuit there. And he's also trying to get a solo career going, but it's not really working out for him. But so Rod joins up with Jeff Beck in late 1967. And I'm surprised at this, but what you read is that they kind of had trouble getting things off the ground for about a year. And enter manager Peter Grant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Who books.
The heavy hand.
Yes.
Of Peter Grant.
Yeah. Ex-pro wrestler.
Iron Fist of the Mountain. Yeah.
Future Led Zeppelin impresario, Peter Grant.
Yeah.
He books them on their first U.S. tour of the U.S. And this, again, is the Jeff Beck group. And this is basically Jeff Beck at this point is that guitar player that used to play in the Yardbirds.
Oh, yeah.
He's not quote unquote Jeff Beck air quotes.
Right.
You know?
Oh, no. That's, yeah.
Opening night in New York City, and Rod Stewart sang the first few songs from behind Jeff Beck's amp, scared shitless to be in New York for the first time.
Wow.
And he ended up doing a few shots of brandy to get him out in front of the crowd to finish the rest of the set.
Brandy.
And what's interesting is that I guess there's, you know, the Yardbirds were kind of a thing, and they're especially in New York where – There was the British invasion thing, and the Yardbirds were certainly a part of that, and everybody knew Jeff Beck. So Jeff Beck comes over to the U.S., and it's his first time ever being here, because I don't think the Yardbirds toured. You know, either way, Jeff Beck was a name in New York.
And then Errol Klabner took his place.
From the Creams?
Yeah, from the Creams. Took his place right after that.
And then Jimmy Page.
And Errol and the Dominoes.
That's right. So it's almost like the... you know, the U.S. audience was kind of waiting for this Jeff Beck guy to come. And, of course, Jeff Beck is just a off-the-charts guitar player.
And Rod Stewart's a young, good-looking, great vocal chops.
Oh,
I mean, back in the day with the raspy, we're
voice,
talking
yeah.
Steve Marriott,
I mean,
kind of raspy.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the shows are very successful, and that leads to great press, which funnels its way back to the U.K.
Unlike the Dolls.
Yeah, not so much with the Dolls,
okay.
But definitely Jeff Beck group is crushing in the U.S.
Just checking.
And they secure a record deal and release the first album called Truth. And later they would release a second album called Beckola. And those are legendary Jeff Beck records.
You must have those records.
Which Rod Stewart is the lead singer on. Now, Rod wasn't necessarily 100% on board with the Jeff Beck group. I guess it was not the best relationship with Jeff Beck. And I'm not saying that this means that Jeff Beck's a dick. I think it has a little bit to do with Rod's insecurity around someone like Jeff Beck, because that guy was a rock star.
And I also think it was musical differences too. Rod was kind of poised to be a rock star, lead singer guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Beck is getting
yeah.
a little bit more experimental with things and getting a little further away from yeah. that accessible route, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And I've always kind of took it like that too, where you know, Beck was getting a little crazier and a little more
out there.
Yeah,
wanted to push the
now.
Guitar end of it.
Hey, whose name's on the bass drum?
Yeah,
that
so
clearly says Jeff Beck.
I would imagine some contention would arise from that. And Rod Stewart says, quote, "It was a great band to sing with, but I couldn't take all the aggravation and unfriendliness that developed. In the 2.5 years I was with Beck, I never once looked him in the eye. I always looked at his shirt or something like that."
Oh, his codpiece.
I don't know if he had a codpiece back then. That more of a 70s.
Oh, yes.
More of a 70s thing. So there's another manager that crops up that saw, you know, Rod Stewart singing with Jeff Beck in 1968. And he's like, dude, solo artist.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's Rod Stewart. How can you not recognize that this guy's a front man?
Yeah.
Who can make his own records.
Yeah. You know? Oh, clever Jeff is holding him back.
Right. Clever Jeff. So now he signs a deal with your aforementioned Mercury Records. But there's a bunch of contractual stuff because Rod did a failed attempt at a solo career back in England. So that kind of put it on hold for a little bit of a time. But meanwhile, Steve Marriott leaves the Small Faces, right?
All right.
Yeah, he's out. He's going to do Humble Pie.
He sure as fuck is. He
and
can do it.
Thank you,
right,
Steve Marriott, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And now Rod's drinking buddy, Ronnie Wood,
uh-huh.
who has, you know, we mentioned, is announced as the new guitarist and invites Rod to join as the singer. So now we have a band called Faces.
Yep. Instead of the Small Faces.
Correct. And this begins this crazy period that Rod Stewart has as a solo artist and a singer of the Faces. His first solo album is November of 1969. The first Faces album is March of 1970.
Okay.
They would operate simultaneously for about 5 years.
What?
Yeah. So it was Faces album, Rod Stewart album, Faces album, Rod Stewart album. And the Faces are playing on Rod Stewart's solo albums.
And you know what? Okay. And when Rod Stewart was producing like Long John Baldry, who did he have playing? What were the players in his band? And
the Faces. That,
yeah.
Yeah.
On the
Kenny Jones. Yeah. The
Everyone Stops for Tea and the It yeah. Ain't Easy records.
Yeah.
Remember him and Elton John, or was it mm-hmm. Split yeah. the – yeah, that's a trip. So they were all just doing different gigs together.
It's very interesting.
Pretty
it
cool.
brings up a very strange dynamic. Here you have some rock stars in the Small Faces, right? And that's no slouch. I mean, they're not
no,
big here in America, but they were big
they
in the UK.
They threw some hits down, bro. You know, they –
And now you have this Rod Stewart character who is a rock star with the Jeff Beck group, which were big records in the UK as well.
Sure.
And so they form the Faces, but Rod Stewart is also a solo artist, and they're playing. So it's a very strange dynamic.
That's weird.
I don't know if there's ever
– What label were the Faces on?
Oh, that's a great question.
Could not have been Mercury. Or it must have – maybe a
– Maybe it was.
Or something owned by the same parent company.
Well, maybe they had to finish out a contract with the Small Faces so that if there was a – yeah, that's a good question.
It's funny. You know, most people who listen to this podcast probably, well, look at your phone, you dummy. So we don't do that.
No,
we don't do that here.
No,
we just keep
having a conversation here.
Yeah, we're talking about stuff. I'd better think, yeah.
So, you know, the Faces, again, you know, were Rod Stewart's backing band for his solo albums, as I said, and the solo albums were far more popular than the Faces albums, at least here in the States. Not necessarily cooler, but
certainly right. Well, that's, you know, that's always going to be the divide between the States and the UK.
Well, what's invariably going to happen when this situation is happening? Rod Stewart is on the road.
Yeah.
You play your Rod Stewart songs, you play your Faces songs. What's the crowd do? They cheer for Maggie May.
Sure.
And they don't know what the Faces song you're playing.
Right.
Right? So, obviously, this brews. Go ahead, Liz.
I know who sang.
Liz. Oh, who is it?
Maggie Bell.
Yes. And who's the other one, AD? You mentioned him.
Well, I did?
Yeah.
Who did I say? I said Flo and Eddie.
You just said him about the albums he produced.
Elton John.
Really? Elton John?
No.
Oh, Long John Baldry.
Long John Baldry.
Oh, yes.
You named him.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, going back to Every Picture Tells a Story, background vocals by Maggie Bell, Long John Baldry.
And there's the Peter Grant connection. Peter Grant ended up managing Maggie
and
Bell.
Jimmy Page.
Yes. It's all intertwined, AD.
Oh, rock and roll. You're such a clever bastard.
So anyway, as we wrap things up here, the last Faces album is called Ooh La La.
Uh-huh.
I believe 1973. Rod sang on it, but he is now being torn in so many different directions he's a rock star now. He's a solo artist.
Yeah, total full
with
on
hits
rock star.
In the charts.
Yeah.
And he hardly participates in the writing or recording. And he's a writer. He's not just a singer, dude. He does write the songs.
He's a really good writer.
Mm-hmm. And he calls the Ooh La La record with the Faces stinking rotten in the NME.
Ouch.
Yeah. So a magazine, New Musical Express. What do you think of the Faces album? It's stinking rotten. And
two words, shit sandwich.
Yeah. He attempted to clarify it in Rolling Stone a few months down the road by saying it was, well, what I meant was the group was capable of doing a better album than we've done. And that, of course, spells the end of the Faces and
Rod
Stewart.
We're done. You know what?
Just
go be
a freaking
rock
star.
Yeah, good. Good to
and
go.
And Rod, what does
he did? He got huge. He got freaking huge.
So he signs a new contract with, it wasn't, I always want to say Atlantic. It's not Atlantic. It's
I think it was Atlantic.
Warner Brothers.
Was it?
It's Warner because the album's called Atlantic Crossing, but it's a Warner Brothers. And that starts that. So that's a very big.
Tonight.
That's the delineation between the camps, because everything before Atlantic Crossing is the Faces.
Yeah.
You know, in that whole scene and what he was doing back then.
It was great, man.
Yeah, it's cool. Really sloppy and drunk.
It was
like the Dolls.
It was rock and roll. And then he became a pop singer.
Yeah.
He crossed that bridge.
And he had to do the glitzy New York City disco-y thing.
So awful.
Which isn't horrible, but it's not nearly as gritty and cool as these records.
Most of that stuff to me is just unpalatable. I find it
crooner.
Right, yeah. And I get it. And he does. He's a great singer. Rod Stewart's a great singer. He's an entertainer.
It's the voice.
The ladies love him. But it's just, you know, me as a rock and roll fan, I'm going, all right, whatever.
So,
next.
So let's pull out the second disc, disc two of The Best of Rod Stewart, and side three, track one. We're going to hear Maggie Bell and Long John Baldry.
Yay.
And now that you know it's them, I think you'll love this. Every Picture Tells a Story, which is a great song.
Yeah, it's a good song.
These guys end up turning this song inside out. It's just acoustic guitar, bass, and drums. But by the end of it, they're just freaking rocking.
Thank you.
didn't need anyone but me. I sincerely thought I was so complete. Look how wrong you can be. The women I've known, I wouldn't let tie my shoe. They wouldn't give you the time of day. But the slit-eyed lady knocked me off my feet. God, I was glad I found her. And if there were words I could tell to you, to have you on the way down the road, I couldn't quote you no Dickens or Shelley O'Keefe.
Basically taking an acoustic song and just making it a rock and roll.
It's a ruckus number,
visceral,
right there.
Just like, let's just throw down.
And it's pretty cool. Like, when you think about it, you've got, like, future members of the Ringo Starr School of Very Fortunate Replacement Guys Club. Kenny Jones, of course, ended up in The Who.
Let me stop you there. It's not Kenny Jones. I looked it up on while we listened. It's Mickey Waller.
Oh.
Who was in the Jeff Beck group.
Yep, absolutely.
And John Baldry. And
you know what? Now that you mentioned, I think Mickey Waller played on those on It Ain't Easy and Everyone Stops for Tea.
I think so. Yeah, it was all part of that group.
It might have been the Beck, yeah.
All right, AD, what you got?
Well, like I said, I've got three treats that have been and presents, but the last two were Christmas presents from people. But this is a present that was given to me, just sort of – this record was gifted to me by Maureen and Aline, one of my students and her mom.
Yep.
And or Tether Way Round, actually. I said that wrong. But anyway, so they gave me this album by an artist named Rodriguez a while back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I did the research on this. Now, what I found out is that the research on this is what you can find when you go looking at regular places is very controlled. Somebody's in charge of laundering that, because I did a story on them. I played a
you
song
did.
From this album, and I brought Cold Fact again.
Okay.
And here's – I've got this obsession with this. This is this guy, Six Toe Rodriguez, who was signed to Sussex Records in 1970. He only did two records, you know, regular studio records. And then there was some sort of aftermarket trying to recoup something or so, you know, aftermarket company doing his best of, which is basically part of the same two records. But when I first played him, and it was I played it on Chevy Road Records show number – what was it? Number 76, called More Spandex, Less Leather. and I played a song on here, and it was kind of like the heavy one. But this guy – yeah. But this guy's kind of got more of a I would classify him as more of an electric Dylan, which I explained last time. And the song I played, I'm like, I'm going to play the heaviest one just because you know
it was
me.
Psychedelic, kind of heavy.
But the story that I told to introduce this was all I was allowed to read when I went researching, okay? So somebody's controlling the Wikipedia. Somebody's got something. And
well, you can write anything I could you want write, on yeah, Wikipedia.
The speed of light is 18 miles an hour.
Yes, right, yeah.
Type it in. But, like, when you go to sources and stuff, it's a little bit controlled. I talked about the story about how all the records and Sussex Records, and they were distributed by Buddha, okay?
Yep, Neil Bogart.
Right? So somehow all these records ended up in Australia, hundreds of thousands of them, right? Mm-hmm. And that this couple—
You mean South Africa?
No. Australia.
Okay, go on.
Australia. See, sorry. That's the story I told when I played the first song on episode 76.
Okay.
And that's a fact. Okay, so then there was this couple who took a tape. They were on vacation from Australia, took a cassette tape, and were hanging out at the beach in Cape Town, South Africa. Okay? Mm-hmm. And people go, wow, this is amazing. Who is this? Oh, it's this guy Rodriguez. And all it is a white album with the guy's face. He's sitting in sort of a, you know, crisscross, applesauce, sitting mm-hmm. Indian style, sitting down. With shades and a top hat and a tank top, and that's the only photo of him. And he's this mysterious character. So this tape gets copied and gets a hold of by this radio guy in South Africa and starts playing it.
Yeah.
Okay, so it gets huge. So now there are three distributors in South Africa, and they're all now sending for this record. This guy gets bigger than Elvis, all of Elvis's records combined. This guy's selling more records.
What
this
we
guy,
would call going viral.
This guy is right. This is 1970, right? Or no, this is not right. Not right away. This is later, like 70, I think. What was it? 5 or 6. Somebody kind of read it. That it took that long. So it was 75, I think. All of a sudden, this guy's huge, right? But this guy's from Detroit. He's living in a shotgun shack in downtown Detroit, paying, you know, $40 a month for, you know, he doesn't even have electricity and shit half the time. So that's the story I told last time, just to catch you up. But here's the deal with that. Sussex Records, they made so much money on this. And where my story comes in, this is the most remarkable story of all time. This guy was huge, never knew it. Now, Sussex Records, this guy, Clarence Avant. I want to talk to you about just keep that name in mind. So there's a film out. There's a film out called Searching for Sugar Man. Ryan, have you seen that movie?
Yes, I have.
What's your – how did that scene with Clarence Avant – okay, so here's the story, and I'm not gonna spoiler alert, not necessary. I'm gonna take you up to a certain point in the story, and then we can talk about it without spoiling it. I want your take on this. So, So this guy's huge, right? He doesn't know it, but the money's going somewhere because he's selling like fucking flapjacks. This is like triple platinum. This is as far as like South Africa's scale of whatever. It's platinum. It's selling all these just tons of records, right? The money's going somewhere because these record stores and these radio stations are legitimately selling these records and they're being played. This guy is a superstar. That's like Whitney Houston, but nobody's ever seen her.
Right.
Ever. There's no video of her. There's only one picture that exists, this mythical figure.
Right.
But people are perplexed. So the story goes on, right? So now he's huge. Now these people in South Africa who idolize this guy have never seen him. All of a sudden they hear this story about he's on stage singing a song, thank you for your time. Now you thank me for mine, blah, blah, blah. Forget it. And he pulls out a gun on stage in front of an audience and blows his fucking brains out. Mm-hmm. So now this legend, now he's selling second record comes out. It's you, right? It's you.
Well, it's hard to make a second record after that happens.
But you know, pre-release. So all of a sudden, I guess
this is all posthumously, supposedly.
No, but it's released because there's this distributor or this warehouse in Australia. These people are buying the records and it's all timed. Now, again, somebody's making money. Who's making money? So they go to this guy, Clarence Avant. Uh-huh. All of a sudden, this record store owner and these distributors and this radio guy get together and go, who the fuck is this Rodriguez guy?
Because nobody knows him. Nobody
Nobody's
can find
seen him.
And the legend is he killed himself on stage.
Yes. So they go, that in itself is a story. And they just wanted to end the story because that's where they believed the story to actually end.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And Ryan, okay, now I don't want to give anything away, but that interview with Clarence Avant,
who is the original...
The original, the founder of Sussex, of Sussex Records, who Rodriguez was signed. And these guys travel far and wide, far and wide. They come to America from South Africa. They go to Australia, to the warehouses. They go everywhere, right? So they come, they go to L.A. to the office of this Clarence Avant, founder of Sussex Records. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, there's a live interview and it's like they mention Rodriguez. He kind of pulls out the record and Clarence Avant gets all teary-eyed and says, oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, getting misty.
Emotional.
He goes,
that's just, my boy right there.
That brings back the record. I mean, the you know, yeah. Too bad he didn't sell anything, man. He could have been, he should have been huge.
How many people bought it? Me, yeah, my wife, Neil Bogart.
Yeah, right.
From Buddha Records.
Right. And then the guy, so he starts pressing the guy. So what about the money? Dude, he hit the on switch. He went from 0 to 60 in a minute. Don't you come around here talking about money to me. I mean, dude, he got really fierce.
I told you earlier that we weren't going to talk about money in this interview.
Yeah, and he fucking lit it up. And that was, right? It
so went what from, does that mean?
Oh, well, that means he made the fucking money. And that means this is...
He made more money than he's letting on.
So I don't want to give the... I don't want to karate chop my mic stand again. I don't want to give the story away, but I have to compel everyone. Please... Dude, is this not the most impossible story you've ever heard? How can this happen?
Searching for Sugar Man, must watch.
It won the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature in 2013.
Yeah.
It was produced,
I imagine there's a lot of people out listening that have seen it. So yeah. It's just fantastic.
Well, it was produced or directed by this Malik Bendishul guy who committed suicide the year after it came out.
What?
Yeah. Yep.
Really?
Yep, absolutely. And then, and remember, but special thanks to Stefan Sugarman Segerman, the guy, the record store owner.
Oh, that guy's
in
great.
South Africa.
Yeah.
And this Craig Bartholomew, the guy I think from Australia or America, I think the American guy. So those two were the guys who were searching, quote unquote, searching for Sugarman. That's the name of the film. Came out in 2012. Please watch this movie. It's the most insane, impossible modern story of rock and roll, like this guy.
It's going viral before that was a thing.
But yeah, so this the record was produced by Mike Theodore and Dennis Coffey of Motown fame. You
know, yeah, and he's in the movie too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a great. This is I Wonder from Colfax. Please, everybody, buy this record. It's a charming. It's a wonderful little old record from an electric blues or what do you call it? Electric folk guy. But what a great story. Please check out Searching for Sugar Man. You have to watch that.
Times you had sex.
Love a great little pop song.
Love that little pop tune.
I wonder how many times you've had sex, and I wonder if you know who's next. I wonder. Rodriguez, that's a Cold Fact album. That's a song called I Wonder. Fantastic. What a great record.
Direct them to Searching for Sugar Man.
Searching for Sugar Man one more time. I will pump that record. This is the most incredible story I have ever heard in the history of rock documentaries, music bio docs. I kid you not. It's the most you go slack jawed over and over again, and you go, holy shit.
Yeah.
There you go. What you got, Ryan?
All right. Well, I got a big goodbye to Liz Morgan, who's been running the controls tonight. Thank you very much. Fantastic job. Filling in for
Tricky Ricky Serrano.
Tricky Ricky, who is doing some engineering and stuff like that. We always give him a hard time when he's not here, of course.
Well, it's like Louis Prima said in an interview. What do you guys talk about when you're touring and you're riding on the tour bus? And Louis goes, whoever's not on the bus.
Exactly.
So that's what we do.
And you guys are always here, those that are listening, and we thank you very much. Make sure you're hanging out with us on Facebook or Twitter, whatever your social media thing is. We are there. If we're not, let us know. And if we're missing something, is there a new thing?
Oh, we're missing something.
MySpace is back.
We're missing that. You know, MySpace really helped us.
All right, Lars, take it easy. And check out the live show every Monday night at 8 o'clock on the West Coast and 11 o'clock on the East Coast. All right. Well, as I take a deep breath to say my farewells, this dank respite of ours greets me with yet another smell that can only be described as a mixture of Fritos and someone getting a perm. But through my glassy eyes, I detect the shabby bandito, A.D. Adams.
Well, Ryan, you know much better than to try to take a deep breath in this shithole. So, but you know what? Here we are in the new year, new season of Shabby, and that's a beautiful thing. It brings a tear to my eye, I think, or it's just the, you know, watering from the smoke.
Smells like perm.
Yeah, the smoke, yeah. But from me and us here at Shabby Road, Liz, thank you for being here again, doing a splendid job. From me, us, all the bums, the hookers, and the junkies here in Sunny Slope at Shithole Shabby Road, we wish you a happy new year. And here we are. Let's go do this again.
Season 4 kicks off right now. Let's make it a good one.
Say it ain't so.
Yes, it's so. It's totally so. Yeah. Let's put on that Uriah Heep.
Oh, you need to hear that.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. NameOnAnything.com.